extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, behind the scenes, but never forgotten, producing Anders is here. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios, the best thing we saw, as always, this time from week three. We're 3 weeks in. Doyle's big takeaway this week, Neville's little finger moment on Gonzalo Higuain, talking Carles Gil. He really effing hates playing in the snow. Like, he will tell you about it in those words, no uncertain terms from him after a loss to RSL at home. Sounders Galaxy felt like a playoff game. Charlotte almost got a point since he won. Yay! Alan Velasco had a dream debut for FC Dallas, and Dane St. Clair stood on his head, and much, much more, including our CCL preview. Does MLS really need to win CONCACAF Champions League, and what would it mean? Let's jump into it. What's up, guys? How's it going? How you feeling? Dave, you're wide-eyed, you're bushy-tailed. You were out of New York City, and now you come back over daylight savings. I've been crushed. 1 hour difference just, it, like, changed my entire life.
Whoa,
overnight.
Oh, man, you are really on the... You are a conveyor belt, and if one little pebble gets in there, it all goes. No, I feel really good. I was in Savannah this weekend. Savannah, Georgia.
Is that a decent accent, Megan?
No. My fiancé, who's in the room Thank making you. Pasta right now, which smells phenomenal, went to school in the South, so she's been doing a Southern accent all weekend and getting mad at me for doing it poorly. It was a great weekend because MLS was spaced out, so every time I had an opening, I got to watch a game. So I got a good amount of games in, and yeah, we already did MLS today with Dunny and Alex Steck from FC Cincinnati, so I'm juiced. I got energy. I feel like Alec Khan right now.
I really enjoy MLS today. It's a great, just like throw it on and hang out on Twitter Spaces while I'm working, getting ready for ETR, whatever it might be. You can listen live on Twitter Spaces 11 a.m. Eastern every single day. You can also now listen on your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, whether that be on Spotify or, you know, Apple Podcasts or Podcatcher or whatever fill in the blank you prefer to use. We've created a feed for that. So every day, MLS Today goes up. And if you search MLS Today, that's what it's under. Power Ranking Show on Tuesday with Doyle and I on Twitter Spaces also goes up there. Of course, we roll through the top 10 with special guests. It's always a lot of fun. And then the MLS After Dark shows that we're doing on Twitter Spaces on the weekends are also going up on that podcast feed. It's one of those things. I enjoy Twitter Spaces. It's also my job to sit around and listen to soccer shows on Twitter Spaces and think about MLS. It might not be your job to do that probably isn't, and you probably would like to listen when it's convenient for you. So we've made that easier. Should be really cool. Let's get into the best thing we saw from week three. I'm going to start us off. NYCFC's massive, uncontainable MLS Cup banner goes up at Yankee Stadium. This was just a moment of true enjoyment for me. I'm not here to make fun of NYCFC. I'm wearing the NYCFC jersey that I was sent. It's actually a wonderful jersey. It's got the star on it.
All the people out there who we be pandered to in the off season and turned against me as the anti whatever, listen to what he just did. In your moment of triumph, Weeby took a pot shot at the back of your Achilles.
That's not a pot shot. I'm not coming in studs up. I'm helping NYCFC up off the ground in what is a wonderful moment for them. I like the banner. It is a little small. But, like, somebody hit us up, Andrew Jolson, and I trust Andrews implicitly. He says that actually the Yankees pendants are actually smaller than this banner.
Well,
so now the Yankees have a lot more.
I was going
to
say, you're obviously fitting 27 in there.
Yeah, there's a high volume situation going on for
27
them.
Rings, bro.
But, yeah, look, it's a wonderful moment for them. It is, again, it does just, like, when you see it unfurled and, like, you know, the guys up there, like, untying it and then it falls down, but it doesn't fall very far. It is kind of funny. But here's my take. They should sell those banners. Every NYCFC fan has space in their home on a wall somewhere to get one of those banners up. Like, size is not an issue. You could pack that thing and take it on the road. If you're going to, let's say, a CONCACAF Champions League game in L.A., you can bring that with you. It's packable. It's, you can transport it. It could be sold. This is it's a collector's item.
Amongst the many things that's happening right now. I was going to say that once the many things that's happening right now, Doyle, we now know Andrew Wiebe's full Midwest. He thinks everyone's got space, quote unquote, yeah, to put up a banner.
Look behind you. Turn around right now. I know you have this beautiful artwork that was put up by and chosen by your fiance. But if you wanted to hand an NYCFC championship banner behind you, you could do so. There's plenty of wall space.
I got to carry that thing up four flights of stairs, through the doorway, past my super, and hang it on a brick wall? No chance.
You can't drill into that brick wall. I know how it goes. But if you go in the mortar, you could probably patch that up. Anyway, that's my the best thing I saw this weekend. And by the way, NYCFC with a nice win over the over Montreal. So that was a good note for them as well. Dave, what's the best thing you saw?
I mean, I think it's going to be pretty obvious for me. You've got one legend in Dab God scoring a goal for Columbus to get a win, honoring another legend in BWP with the click the heels celebration, which I think Charlie said the best last week on our show in talking about his retirement when he was like, I hated it so much because it was so good and it meant he scored against you. And I think a lot of fans sort of felt that. I remember when he broke the, or he scored his, what was it, 100th goal at DC, and it was like that perfect moment. He goes to the corner, he does the heel clicks early in the Audi field. It was an awesome moment to see Bradley Wright Phillips signing the one-day contract to retire and then being announced he'll be a part of the front office for the Red Bulls. And this is exactly what I've been talking about for 2 weeks when people bring it up in 7 years as he's been a part of the club, is he has, as a player, worked hard and cared about young players coming into the league and helping their careers. Derek Etienne Jr. is 10 years younger than him, chose to do that because of what BWP did for his career and helped him. I think Alex Mule will tell you the same thing. Sean Davis, Tyler Adams, Brian White, all these guys. And it's really special. BWP, I think, is going to do as much maybe for the game in this country in his post-playing career as he did in his playing career. And it was cool that it was just such a genuine moment and shows you BWP had trouble at times at clubs in England, finds his feet with Red Bulls. Derek Etienne never really found his feet with Red Bulls, won an MLS Cup with Columbus, and is now a locked-in starter. It sort of shows you what he can do for young players and help them sort of find their way.
It was just also the story of a guy who was on a tryout and now is a forever part of the club. Sorry, Doyle, you're just absolutely getting, for the first time ever,
steamrolled. Absolutely steamrolled.
No Kalen here, and Goss and I are like, oh, let's talk about Savannah.
I feel like you guys came in at an 11, and I'm like chilling at like a 6, maybe. I don't know.
Gonzalo Higuain-esque over there.
Wow, we gotta pull you. We gotta give you the hook. I need the best from my quality players. I need quality from Doyle. So what's the best thing you saw in week 3?
Before I get into that, I just want to say that BWP retiring last week continues just like a brutal offseason for those of us who loved MLS in the 2010s, because BWP retired, Wando retired, Diego Valeri left, Boniek, he left, he's kind of retired. Like Matt Beisler, like a lot of legends have hung it up in the past 6 months. A lot of guys who made this league a hell of a lot of fun to cover for the whole time that I've been doing it. And just good luck to all of them. BWP obviously included, and he's the headliner this week because he did hang him up, and hopefully he could do in some executive position with that Red Bulls team what he was able to do as a player, just as you said, David, in terms of mentoring a lot of those young guys who came through and making them better soccer players. Okay, so sorry about that. The best thing I saw this weekend was my Twitter feed, because FC Cincinnati fans came crawling back to me, crawling back on their hands and knees, thanking me for saving their team after the performance Alec Khan had this weekend. That first weekend, they gave up 5 goals. He didn't make a single save. All of them in my mentions screaming at me that he was a fraud, that he was worse than Vermeer and Titon. Like, trust me, this guy is.
You mean Ajax goalkeeper
good.
Semi-Shaw Titon?
I was going to say, Champions League goalkeeper. Would you call this procession of FC Cincinnati fans a march back to your good graces, or how would you define that?
Let's call it a march. Let's just stay on brand for as seasons.
God, they're so good at marches. They're elite at marches.
Alec Khan was just had the type of shot-stopping performance this weekend that FC Cincinnati has had like maybe once in their 3 years of existence. And in years past, that would have been a 4-2 loss. They got a 2-1 win. So it's happy to see just a little bit more competence out of what I think is still one of the more ambitious teams in the league. And that ambition being paired with good domestic players is like a new concept for FC Cincinnati. And so all of the above was the best thing I saw this weekend.
We will talk more about Cincinnati, and Brandon Vasquez had a brace in this one, and also Dom Baji, who put Juan in the ground. So we'll get to that one. We'll also get to, Doyle, your biggest Week 3 takeaway. Remember, go read the column, Armchair Analyst, every Monday. It's a tradition unlike any other. Check it out. But first, let's get to our lead story. And Anders, please just play the audio. Carlos Hill, after a 3-2 loss to RSL that they led 2-0, did the Revs in New England.
Carlos, you had the 2-0 lead. What happened?
I don't understand nothing today. I don't understand. Play like this. Do you think we play football, soccer today? Do you think we can play soccer today? I don't care about if we win, we lose. I don't care. They score 3 big goals. I don't care. It's impossible to play football today. I cannot talk with my teammates. I cannot write. I cannot do anything. It's impossible. This is not football. Stop the f***ing game. We play tomorrow or any other day. I don't care. This is not football. It's impossible. Like, what is try to be long balls, to try to the wind is impossible. I don't understand nothing.
He's arrestingly good looking, and I can't like, once they zoom in on him, I'm like, wow, okay. But that is frustration incarnate for Carlos Hill. And this was temperatures in the teens. If you watch this game, this is snow on the field. This is slick conditions on the turf at Gillette.
It's also three days after a game in the snow.
It is. I will say, and we had some New Englanders jump in here, and I talked to Charlie about it last night. He said the conditions were markedly different.
Yeah.
It's like playing, having those temperatures in the teens, having the wind at the level that it was at. Yes, the snow was pretty similar. And, you know, Carlos Hill said this is the best performance of the season after they beat Pumas.
But that's what I'm saying.
He was not having this one.
That's how you know how bad it is that 3 days ago they played in the snow and he's complaining about how bad the conditions are today. Also, by the way, he says that if they had won by two, he'd still be complaining. I don't believe that part. I just want to put that out there right now.
The rhetorical questions for the interviewee were pretty good. Never letting it stop. Just the body language. Everything about that. A wonderful interview from Carlos Hill. But look, LD hit us up and says, hey, guys, no need to listen to Extra Time today, as surely the narrative regarding RSL has and will be that they beat a heavily rotated side in a weather-delayed match in Seattle. Did they beat the Revs, but Carlos Hill whined about conditions so the win doesn't mean much? Or will somebody stand up for RSL? We will not. We will refuse to stand up for RSL. We will acquiesce in the face of that responsibility and defer to MLS Today, which had Brian Dunseth on, to talk through this. Sell us on the interview. I mean, you guys went into it. You dug deep. I mean, you had Bobby Wood advocating for Bobby Wood to be called up to the U.S. national team. That's how deep you went into this, Dave.
Yeah. Dummy, obviously, he's around the team as much as anyone. He knows as much as what's going on. And I think you could feel his excitement. And I think part of his excitement is he knows what they're talking about in terms of acquisitions. And he brought it up before I did, because I kind of thought we'd do the interview and he'd be like, Pablo's got the guys playing hard. There's a lot of talent in this team. I didn't think he'd focus on additions and how they can get better as quickly. And that's like where he went immediately. And I think that's the excitement around the club, is there's a belief that there's a new dawn coming, that there are pieces coming, that they're already starting to fix up the stadium, the facilities, all the things that have sort of gone by the wayside over the last few years, as there hasn't really been that guiding hand. And so that, on top of the soccer they're playing, I think is where you get a ton of that excitement. And Dunny came on for about, as you said, 20 minutes to talk all about it, break it down. And they've done this without Aaron Herrera, without David Ochoa, without Demir Krylak now for a large stretch of it. Like, this has not even been the full squad that they have in Salt Lake, on top of potential additions that could be coming.
Yeah, so it was a would huge you win. Say that MLS today fills in the analytical gaps that the narrative obsessed hosts of Extra Time kind of leave in their coverage? Is that what you say? What you would say MLS today does?
I don't know. Dunny denigrated Super Target and put Nordstrom on a pedestal, so that feels pretty hot take narrative to me. Like
Dunny's apparently got DP money. Okay,
I know, man. He's got deep pockets.
I would say that we answer more than one of the W's. Where maybe on Extra Time we just answer the what. And not the why or the how or anything.
Wow. I'm just being slandered to my face right now.
Listen, KU journalism, show. Baby.
You've been on this show for literal years, like almost a decade for some of us here. And you're like, oh, well, on this show. Like, okay. Anyway,
listen, man, I don't really listen to Extra Time, so I don't know what goes on over there. But if you
are. Yeah, you're just on it. RSL, 7 points tied with LAFC atop the Western Conference right now. With as we said here, wins against Seattle and New England. That's pretty darn impressive. We'll see if they can keep it rolling, and I do think the additions are a big thing. That's what I'd heard rumbling out from the squad in preseason of like, yeah, a lot of people talking about the subtraction here with Rusnak and others, but you just wait. Like, if we get some players in here, this could change, and right now they're overachieving. Ex-human spirit is very high, and so are goals scored compared to goals against. All right, go check out MLS today. We can't sell that anymore. Let's talk, Doyle, about your big takeaway, and let's go right back to the land of narratives. Miami hosting a match against LAFC. Miami losing a match against LAFC 2-0. Wasn't that notable in that sense, but it was notable what Phil Neville decided the post-game interview was for. Walk us through what happened after this match.
Yeah, I didn't see it myself, but our guy Ben Wright was in there listening to it, and he reported on it, and Phil Neville just backed the bus up over Gonzalo Higuain, who he had subbed off in the 63rd minute. One of the quotes is, "I just wanted more quality from my quality players. Every team we've played against, their quality players stand up and score. Ours don't, and they need to." And he went on to say, "Higuain's role hasn't changed. He's our best finisher. We need him to finish. He's our best passer, our most creative player. We need him to get assists." And like, there's a lot of truth in that, right? Like, he's still their best player. He has not scored, but it's all obscuring the fact that he's not set up to succeed, right? His role has changed. Gonzalo Higuain has been a forward for 20 years, going back to his youth days. He's playing as a number 10. And it's not just he's wearing the number, right? He changed his number this offseason. He's wearing the number 10 now. He's actually playing as a number 10 underneath a lone center forward, whether it's Campana or Ariel Lassiter. And he is the only creative guy on the field. Behind him, you have a midfield with Gregory and Mo Adams, two pure defensive midfielders. John Mota is more of a box-to-box guy, but he's not very creative as well. I haven't seen much creativity from Taylor, the new winger that they brought in as well. It's kind of a 4-4-2. It's more of a 4-4-1-1 where Higuain is allowed to drift and pick up the ball and try to create chances, and it's all he can do. It's all he can do because of the way this team is set up, and he's third in the league in chance creation. Like, he's doing that part of the job. He's not scoring goals, but how is he going to score goals if no one else on the field can provide the final ball? So while I understand that Phil Neville wants more from his best player, and I don't blame him because, as good as some of the stuff that Pepita has done is, he's not been overwhelmingly great through three games. We can all agree with that. The real issue with Miami is how they're set up. The midfield is ultra defensive. So, of course, Higuain is going to focus almost entirely on creating chances, especially while he's playing a new position. And then on top of that, this is the second straight week where Phil Neville has set his team up for failure by playing Breck Shea on the back line. Breck is 32. I understood making the decision to play him as a defender when he was 20, when he was 22, when he was 25 years old, because you just hope he could have one of those mid-career position switches. We've seen it happen for dozens of players in MLS. A mid-career position switch to the back line. You get to weaponize his ability to go forward, and he hopefully gives you good enough defense. A million different coaches have tried this over the past decade. Every single one of them have failed. Austin ripped them apart last week with Breck Shea as a left center back and a 3-5-2, I will say. It wasn't entirely Breck's fault, but he was very, very poor. And anybody who's watched these experiments with him as a defender over the past decade could have told you what was going to happen. In this one, he lined up as a left back in a 4-4-1-1. He lost track of Kwadwo Opoku, who got behind him for the first goal. And then just before halftime, Breck Shea, we know this, he sleepwalks through crucial transition moments defensively. I forget who it was who got behind him or got into the open field from LAFC, but like Breck just like doesn't see it happening, reacts too late, grabs him, pulls him down, red card, Miami down to 10 men. You can blame Breck Shea because he was terrible, but you should blame the coach for putting him and the team in that position in the first place. And it was kind of shocking to me to see Phil Neville go out there in this press conference and lay it all on the feet of his DP, who, again, has not been great. There are certainly qualms you could have with how Gonzalo Higuain has played. But to lay it all at his feet, instead of saying, you know what, I've gotten some stuff wrong, we have to come together as a team, the mistakes that are happening at the back, that's on me, I used these guys incorrectly, and we have a decade worth of film to show exactly how that was going to happen, and I just blew it. I found that to be shocking. And it felt like he was trying, honestly, to do either one of two things. To shift blame so that nobody is talking about how he has gotten it wrong through three games, which I think worked. Or, like, maybe Gonzalo Higuain is so... Maybe Gonzalo Higuain has lost the locker room so badly as a star player that Phil Neville is trying to rally the locker room against him. I cannot figure out any other approach for what happened in this post-game press conference, because like it hit DEFCON 1 real, real quick right there. And like we're three games into the season and it feels like Miami has already really started to fall apart.
That was my thing.
Shocked.
Three games in. That is so early. And I understand, like, if you're Neville and you look at Higuain and you're like, the body language is bad, we're not getting production. By the way, to go to the lack of sort of creativity on the field thing, nobody on this team had more than like 0.08 expected assists in this match at home. 0.08, including Gonzalo Higuain. They're not exploding with ideas, but to do it three games in, and Higuain, I've talked about it a lot. I mean, he has to already be salty. Like, the positive, he's making a ton of money. The negative is, whatever project he was sold on has been imploded and had to be imploded. And Chris Henderson, as he told us and as we know, is doing the hard work to try to rebuild them back to something that is respectable. But, like, I could see how he would be bitter, but they still need him to win, to have any chance of winning. It's not like if you get the rest of the squad like together, I still don't think that this is going to be a playoff team. The only way that happens is if Gonzalo Higuain is, you know, like a 10-10 guy, which he has the obvious ability and talent to do.
He was 12-9 last year.
Is this going to motivate Gonzalo Higuain? Like, I don't know. Maybe it might motivate somebody else, but it doesn't feel like Gonzalo Higuain is going to be like, cool, Phil Neville, I'm really glad to get the public lashing here. Like, I'm sure he knows, look, I need to be better. But also, it just doesn't. It's hard to understand what the long game here is three games into the season.
And you talk about the turnover and the roster. It is a roster because of the way MLS is built. The only money they have to play with is money for young players. So then the quality in this team is all new young players, which never hits an MLS immediately. So you've got Rodriguez, who has barely played. Campana has struggled. You've got draft picks. You've got Noah Allen. You've got all these pieces. Quinteros. That's all going to take time. So what is the advantage of throwing Gonzalo Higuain under the bus 3 games in to then what? In 4 months when Rodriguez hits and Campana gets comfortable that you then don't have your DP being interested and invested? It felt very odd to do. And it sort of feels like maybe Phil Neville wasn't prepared for what this season would look like, which is shocking because he was the coach of this team last year, which is what it looked like.
Well, the whole thing was like, could they avoid the like chaos and just blasting themselves in the foot?
Yeah.
And it's like a couple games in and we're already right back here. You know? Like
Austin FC for tearing the franchise down in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I don't like, it just seems so strange to me that this would be what would play out publicly. Like privately, okay, like I get it. You have problems. You're not winning games, you're not getting results. Like there are things to handle behind closed doors probably, and I'm advocating for more of this to happen in public. Don't get me wrong here. I just don't understand the end game for Inter Miami. But hey, Carlos,
I am just so I can't wait for Felipe to go down to Fort Lauderdale and get himself a sit down with Gonzalo Higuain and just see what comes out of that interview, because like it's like there's got to be something cooking.
Well, watch out, because Gonzalo Higuain told a reporter last week that the reason he liked playing in MLS is even when reporters disagree, they're at least respectful about it. So therefore, Messi should come. So he expects respect.
Well, from reporters, no mention of managers in that sense. Carlos Vela is back and starting for LAFC. That's good. Still seems like they're sort of working, you know, they're sort of working around some things, including his health. And Arango's fitness and form, maybe. But, hey, top of the Western Conference, 7 points so far. Opoku, I think, looks like a good player, a useful player for Steve Cherundolo. And they have a ton of depth. So LAFC with a nice road win against Inter Miami. But, of course, Phil stole the show. Let's jump into some of these other big games around here. How about Seattle-LA Galaxy, which felt like a playoff game?
Yeah, it was good.
Like, it's sometimes we don't get rewarded early in the season with these matchups that and like occasions that feel like they should be big, and this felt big throughout. The intensity felt like it was there. Both teams, I don't know if they played at their very best, but they put everything they had into it, which I thought was interesting from Seattle given the place that they're in their season. We'll talk about CCL in just a little bit. But a 3-2 win, Doyle, that was big time. It's set pieces again for the Sounders. It's question marks about the sample size for the back line for the LA Galaxy. But possession-wise and chance creation-wise, I thought they had a really nice game. They just couldn't outscore Seattle.
Yeah, they look like a better team to me than they were last year. And it does come down to that deep central midfield. With Mark Delgado and Ryan Ravalison together, they have an ability to compress space in a way that the Galaxy really haven't done for a good long while. So that's one. And two is like, okay, they also seem to have a rhythm together where Ravelison can push forward. And if he goes forward, Delgado sits. Delgado suddenly transforms into like a pure number eight or number six rather. And we saw that on the opening goal, which is a lovely 13 pass movement back to front, ends with Ravelison feeding Chicharito in the box for the 1-0. Like they are able to put together sequences like that. Defensively, look, they posted 2 shutouts in the first 2 weeks. They didn't give up a goal from open play in this one. What happened is that one of their guys just had a nightmare. You know, Julian Araujo kind of had an own goal on the first one. Though, to be fair, it wasn't really on him. That was just a mess of a corner kick defensively for the Galaxy. The second one, though,
he seemed to think, by the way, that they were dropping on that. Or maybe I'm thinking of the third goal. There's one where Julian is the one who holds everyone on. It was the third goal.
Yeah, that's the third goal.
He seems to be reacting as if he did the right thing and no one else was on the same page. When you watch the goal go.
When one guy.
That's Galaxy defending for you right there. But like, hold on, guys. Wait a minute. What page are we even on? Are we in the same book right now? Like, what the hell?
So I don't know. Like, Julian Araujo has been awesome since he won the starting job at right back a year ago. I think this is a one-off from him. I think the Galaxy obviously are going to spend some time in the lab working on set-piece communication and defense. I still think that the Galaxy that we saw in the first 2 weeks is something closer to what they're going to be than the kind of disaster that they had this week. I mean, they scored two goals on the road at Seattle, and they did it in style. And obviously nobody in that locker room is going to be happy, but there actually was a lot of positive stuff to take away from that game from a Galaxy fan. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the way they conceded was heartbreaking. Like, they were momentum moments where the Galaxy were on top and felt good, and they gave them up. Can you guys explain to me? I get it's a big game. Albert Rusnak is your designated player acquisition who has struggled to start the year finishing. You get a penalty kick at home, and a senior citizen, Freddie Montero, has to take it? Like, are you kidding me? I just don't get that at all. And I guarantee, I haven't seen the quotes.
It's good marketing for the coffee shop.
Yeah, for sure. I guarantee Brian Schmetzer said it's their decision to make. Freddie scored them this week. He looked good. That's great.
But you kind of want Freddie to like hand it off, maybe. Like, if it's their decision to make. I get that he wants it.
Maybe,
Freddie's always going to want
it. But also, how healthy is Raul Ruiz Diaz going to be? Is he going to play this week in CCL?
Probably
not. We don't know that. Maybe you just want to make sure that Freddie's in a good rhythm, feels good about putting the ball in the back of the net. I think it's a very easy call. Let the guy who just converted the penalty the other day against Leon, let him
with class
the penalty
too.
In
Rusnak
this one.
Missed
yeah.
two sitters against Leon. You would have won 5-0.
I get what you're saying, but like, this was it's not like they were up 4-1.
No, they were down.
This
I get
one.
It.
Like,
it's a big moment.
Like, the game was in the balance, dude. Like,
you signed a DP and you
hot.
Said, this is the dude. Get him going. Like,
you get him going. Get him going when the stakes are not that high. Freddie Montero is probably going to start in the Champions League this week. He's probably going to start at center forward. Keep that guy scoring goals, whether it's from the spot or on a near post run or whatever.
We got Doyle up 2-11. It took a few minutes when we got him there.
If Kaelin was here, we would ask him how you work this all out. You know, we would ask Kaelin, like, within the team, does it matter that they argued over this, that they felt like a little bit of like, hey, I really want this
way. And Kaelin would say, I was never the one to take the penalty.
Or he would say, if I had a particular Kaelin, say, like, I kind of like this. You know, like, both guys want it. There's an element of like, ambition.
But here's
and competitiveness
my thing. I have no problem with any of that. There has to be an adult in the room. There has to be a leader.
Well, it seems like there was one.
To the group.
There was.
Freddie.
That's not how that works.
It was a 40-year-old who scored two goals.
Yeah, exactly. Freddie was like, it was like, all right, hand me the ball. Like, I know you're going to be mad, but I'm going to finish this. We'll all go celebrate over here. We'll win this game in CCL. Like, come back. Finish your sitters, Albert.
To echo everything Doyle said.
It sounds like me at dinner. Like, finish your dinner, Cameron. Like, and then we can talk about ice cream, all right? If you want to have the special stuff, do the average
stuff. Weeby's a dad.
Yeah, I didn't notice. But I do think you leave this game for the Galaxy. You feel hopeful about the way your group looks. And this is what Seattle's capable of. I think this is why all of us picked them to win so many trophies. They didn't play well. They didn't play great. And they put up three goals, and they won in a huge national TV game coming off a huge CCL game. There are so many winners in this team that can do it individually, that can wake them up, like Roldan did, I think, at times on Wednesday.
Christian Roldan has been so good on the wing.
Yeah.
He's been absurdly good on the wing.
And I think I thought Wednesday night was one of the best I've ever seen Joao Paulo play for this team, and he's played at an MVP level, and obviously what you're getting from Vargas. So this is why people believe in Seattle, and this is why people pick Seattle without their two arguably best players. They put up a 3-0 win over Leon and a 3-2 win over the Galaxy.
Do you have any concern, Dave, just about the long-term viability of the David Goss theorem vis-a-vis Kevin Cabral?
It's been rough. But then he hit the post. So it's been tough. Listen, I had a back and forth with someone about Drew Yearwood on Twitter yesterday with the Goss theorem. It took him the second half of the season. It just has to happen. You just have to find your feet at some point.
Just need a sliver.
Either that or let Samuel Grandsir take over and
find it. Look, we got to diversify the theorem here. Like, we got a lot of candidates here. We might have to move some nuggets around, make sure they're in the right place. How about Efra? He almost did it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The left foot. At what point?
I wanted that to go in so bad.
I don't know. I just want him to be the starter. I just want this to be the year that he sort of takes over. I know, but like long term.
But it's on him though.
I know.
And as Doyle, you mentioned Revelison, his freedom. It actually looked like the Galaxy used Efra as a decoy at times, and Revelison was the one that found openings, not just on the goal. He overloaded a lot with Nuhu and like gave Julian options to come underneath, go outside and create spaces. It felt like Efra was a decoy in a way for the Galaxy to pull the center mids around and have Revelison or Raheem Edwards coming inside pop up and create chances, which worked for them. Obviously, it didn't fit towards Efra having a high-level game, but I think credit to him that he continued to work hard and stay involved. It is his spot, I think, and I think the Galaxy set it up well in having Vasquez, who can't play every game but is an option there.
All right, that's a big win for Seattle. We'll talk about them more coming up in CCL. They'll play on Thursday in Leon. They have that 3-0 lead on aggregate going to Estadio Leon. Let's talk Cincinnati without a single, okay, only one spoon reference, and this is the one because they got a dub on the road. That's almost as rare as them winning at home. Actually might be more rare, technically, given last year. But anyway, they go to Orlando and win 2-1. Brandon Vasquez, we sort of teased it. Alakon has a nice game here. Had a couple emails come in. Derek Christian says, is the Cincinnati win at Orlando a case of a blind squirrel finding a nut, or is this how they plan to grind out wins? And Morgan Tenzo wants to know, what's the takeaway from the Cincy win over Orlando for either squad? So what's the big takeaway for Cincinnati outside the goalkeeping situation, Doyle?
You got to start with the goalkeeping situation, because like I said, a couple segments back, this is a 4-2 loss last year and the year before. So they got that right. I think the other big takeaway is like Brandon Vasquez through three games, he leads the league in shots. He had himself a brace in this one. He now has 6 goals and 2 assists in his last 7 games worth of minutes going back to last season. He's not a fancy player at all. He gets himself into the 6-yard box and he finds high leverage chances. And obviously, in this 3-5-2 that Pat Noonan's mostly playing in this one, I think there was a tactical switch or formational switch at some point. He had good chemistry with Dom Baji, who has been spending time in the weight room clearly. And he also had good chemistry last year with Brenner down the stretch. And that is good on a large scale picture, because like Pat Noonan comes from the Union. Pat Noonan, spent time under Jim Curtin and Ernst Tanner. And the philosophy of that team is 2 forwards in transition. 2 forwards, get out in transition. Hopefully, Lucho can keep up and be third guy coming in for pullback goals and all that. It feels like there is a credible attacking foundation now for FC Cincinnati. It feels like we know that Dom Baji is a useful MLS forward. The past year and a half, he's been a little more than useful. He's been pretty good, I think. We see that Brandon Vasquez is evolving into that. We know that Brenner, he had a rough year, but he also had 8 goals as a 20-year-old in a new country in the middle of a global pandemic. And like that seems pretty decent to build on. And we know that Lucho keeps emptying the tank week after week after week. So I'm not going to say bullish on this Cincinnati attack, but like if you have Lucho playing underneath two of those guys, that's something to build on, man. And this team has never, literally never had something to build on. They have something to build on now. They have 3 points. There's reason to be optimistic, at least a little bit, if you're an FC Cincinnati fan going out, coming out of this game, because this is not the type of game they ever would have won in the past 3 years.
And I think part of that goes to Pat Noonan as well, to make the tactical change. The halftime tactical change to shift his team a little bit, as Doyle said, more to a back four, took off Ian Murphy, put Dominic Baji in that space, brought on Atanga. Those were moves that no FC Cincinnati manager has ever made successfully. So I think having an identity works. Pat Noonan clearly has that. FC Cincinnati is still learning it, but they'll get there, I think. And as Doyle said, a decent amount of these pieces fit it. But then also having a coach who knows the league, knows what other opponents are doing, and then is able to and willing to make changes, that's all new for this team. And so that has to be exciting if you're a fan to say you've finally got a manager who understands at Orlando at halftime what they're showing you, what the Heat's like, what the pressure's like. How can I shift this to make this easier for my team? So I think on top of what you saw from Alec Khan, you also saw it from Pat Noonan. And those are both aspects that have never existed for this club.
Lucho Costa, you just got to say one of the signings that kind of just changes everything that Cincinnati is capable of. I know they didn't realize it last year because so much else was wrong. But he is a truly special player. Like, if you're wondering, should I watch Cincinnati? Like, they haven't been good for 3 years. You should watch them for Lucho. His ability to find those little half spaces in transition moments, get turned, get running, receive the ball, and then play the right pass and make good runs. Really special player. By the way, the next three games for Cincinnati, they got Miami at home. At Charlotte. Oh. Montreal at home, who don't have a win and have been distracted by the Champions League. Then they're at Seattle and Atlanta, and then it's LAFC. So there's some tough ones after that. But maybe, just maybe, they're dragging themselves out of the basement here and a good start with a win on the road against Orlando. Okay, let's talk about our 2222 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. That's Alan Velasco of FC Dallas. Yeah, there's a deflection there, but it was a beautiful, like, just solo goal by him to seal a 2-0 win for Dallas at home against Nashville. And we have a question here from Mason Carmichael. It says, how hopeful should FC Dallas fans be that Alan Velasco will hit an MLS quickly? Incredible debut, of course, the banger, but we've been burned on international signings before. Can we be confident that he is going to be different? So, what do you think, Dave?
I think, obviously, off this moment, there's reason to be confident, or there's reason to have belief. I think what stands out is, there are going to be chances for him. Everything dies on hot air O'Brien right now. Like, so he doesn't have to do everything. You're not asking him to come in and be your star player, your finisher, your number 10. You're just asking him to be a decent part of what's already being built up. The midfield three looks super comfortable right now. Everyone's confident on the ball. They know their rotations. They know how to find space. Jesus Ferreira will create chances for you. Paul Arriola will create chances for you. Marco Farfan will do most of the defensive work behind you. Like, I think what, as an FC Dallas fan, I'd be excited about is there's a clear role. There's a limitation to what he's required to do to be successful in year one. And I think there's a team around him that he can fit in with very comfortably. So that's where, if I'm an FC Dallas fan, I feel like this could be different. And it's not required to figure it out. And also, the team's built around you right now, 1 week into you being here. And it's not some of the other pieces they've brought in the past where you have that expectations early on.
What's the big picture for Dallas with this win, or for Nashville? Because Gary Smith basically said afterwards, we weren't up for it straight up.
Yeah, they didn't look up for it. They didn't have much energy from the start. I thought Dallas was all over them. Mm-hmm. They were using that 4-3-3 of Nico Estevez, which if you're a U.S. national team fan, you should watch Dallas play because it's basically the same formation, the same system, the same principles of play that Greg Berhalter, I think, wants out of his team. They were using that 4-3-3 to sort of pull Nashville's tight midfield diamond apart, move them from side to side, create gaps, make them run, wear them out. And it happened. It eventually worked, and Nashville couldn't get pressure to the ball. Though it should be said, both goals came like minutes after Dallas switched to more of a 4-4-2 with Jesus Ferreira dropping underneath Frank O'Hara a little bit. But like Paul Arriola and Velasco were still playing as wingers. You know, it was still like, even though they were technically wide midfielders in a four, they were definitely still playing as wingers. So I think from Nashville, I'm not going to say back to the drawing board because they've been, you know, this is a third game of an 8-game road trip. They've shown the ability to get road results over the past 3 years now, or 2.5 years, in a way that few teams can. But there were cracks. There were cracks in this performance that Minnesota and Seattle weren't able to create or find in the previous 2 weeks. And I do wonder if we're going to see, especially with Dax McCarty not looking particularly healthy, if we're going to see this team go back to the 3-5-2 that they used for most of the second half of last year, maybe get Jack Marin, get Dax a little bit of rest, go with Sean Davis and Anibal Godoy in that central midfield, play with wing backs instead of full backs. They obviously, they can still be a very good defensive team, especially in organized, you know, defending, especially playing low block. They can be a very good defensive team doing that as well. And I honestly think the Diamond served them well through 2.5 weeks, just like the second half of this game. They ran out of gas. And credit to Dallas for doing that and having the right game plan to make that happen.
I was going to ask, have you felt like in 3 years you've ever seen Randall Leal play like 2 games well, continuous?
I thought he was good in the first 2 games of the season.
I thought he was good against Seattle. I didn't feel like he was much of a presence against Minnesota. Also, that game had the weird break where they were clearly better in the first half than the second half. It just feels like they've not gotten the best of him from what you see when he's good with Costa Rica, which was also a year ago at this point or plus. It doesn't feel like he's fit really well. And this, I thought the Diamond would be a good way to line him up. And I think there's talent there that Nashville can tap into that sort of needs to help create the margins for them because they play so tight. And that's my reaction. This is not drawing board. This is Nashville. They're not probably a Sportage Shield winner, which is what everyone thought coming out of the Seattle game. They are a top 4 seed in the West on a long road trip. It's going to look like this. And I think that's okay. But Randall Leal is one of those players. Obviously, Ake Loba is the big one that could elevate them.
By the way, Ake Loba came on for 10 minutes. His touch was abysmal.
Yeah, he's been bad.
And we've like kind of touched on it a little bit in this show that like it's weird that this team spent so much on a guy who had been productive at times in Liga MX and now can't get on the field and doesn't really seem to fit Gary Smith's, you know, approach. But like maybe he's just not good enough because like he's not making a case for, he keeps getting these 10-minute cameos. He has not made a case for himself that he deserves more than that.
I want to say he's played 520 minutes. While you're having this conversation about Leal, I was doing the calculations on how much per minute on the transfer fee Nashville has paid so far for Ake Loba. And it's about, if he's paid 520, which is in that region since he got there, which is incredible. It's that little given his transfer fee was like seven and a half. 7 million divided by 520 is $13,461 per minute played. And if you want to do the math on the goals and assists, that's going to get even uglier.
And what's your number there? Like, what do you value dollars per minute? I don't know, man. Because we've literally never done this before on someone else. So we have just no scale to go off.
I just did it for fun. Nice. I just did it for fun. It means nothing. But now you know, $13,461.
You know what? Paolo Mascherini would tell you to throw your numbers away.
Well, I don't think his expected human spirit numbers on the field are not super high either. John Arnold, before the game, apparently Alan Velasco was told that Walker Zimmerman plays in the U.S. national team and he plays well. And Alan said he really likes how Walker played, so they traded jerseys. He noticed he won a lot of balls on set pieces. Alan Velasco says he likes to collect shirts. He did it in Argentina. He hopes to keep doing it here. I'm just going to, just for fun, next game is Portland at home. Whose shirt should he try to get?
Diego Chara.
Yeah, from an MLS perspective, Diego Chara.
But Sebastian Blanco.
From he might score a bike perspective, you got to go with Jimmy Chara.
Or Dyron. Right. Dyron. I know that Jimmy's had the bike, you know, the bike side locked down this year, but I don't know, man. If Dyron might throw one in here, he might have gotten jealous. At Chicago, who does he go for?
Come on.
Got to go Shaqiri, right?
Dude. Are you kidding me?
Okay, here's a
harder one. Gaston has time to take his shirt off.
Only one player on the roster for Chicago Fire has ever played in a Liga MX final and a World Cup for the U.S. men's national team. And that's Northwestern soccer volunteer assistant coach Jonathan Bornstein.
I like that.
I think Federico Navarro, maybe he's got a relationship with him, both young Argentine guys. So I don't know. Maybe it's there. How about this? Colorado. Who would you try to get off Colorado?
Who would I try and get, or who should he?
Yeah.
Diego Rubio keeps playing like this. It's Diego Rubio.
Chilean international. That's a good one to add to the collection.
We all know that Mark Anthony Kay is going to have himself a World Cup best 11 winter performance. So.
And if you're a true MLS nerd, Alan, I don't know if you are, Drew Moore is available. Well, you have to go to the bench to get it, but Drew Moore is there.
I just want to say, because I've been told that he is a huge ETR fan. So shout out to Alan. Hi, Alan. I have a game-worn signed Colin Warner jersey, and it's worth every bit. So that would be my recommendation as someone who can attest. It just changes your space.
All right. Well, look, we had another note from Andre Soto who says Edwin Cerrillo has excelled against Pozuelo, Heel, and Mukhtar so far. So talking about that midfield, just throw it out there. That's what Andres thinks. How about Atlanta-Charlotte? How about the moment when Jake Mulroney banks it off the back of a Charlotte defender, and the entire Charlotte team drops in unison. It was like the plug got on. You know, it's like somebody unplugged them. Just like, almost had a draw in Atlanta. Of course, Miguel Angel Ramirez had said, we're trying to spoil this. We're trying to go to their house and take a dub. They didn't quite get it, but they did get their first goal. I personally did not know who Adam Armour was. And I pride myself on knowing basically every single possible player that there is in Major League Soccer. You're giving me that look right now, Dave. I know it. I'm as ashamed as
we have
you're making me feel
about
right
him
now
on this show.
Did we?
Well, he was like their second ever signing. So yeah, we did.
Okay. Oh yeah. So anyway, it's fitting that a North Carolina kid from Cary, who started with the USL team there, who then went overseas and came back to be with this team to start, gets the first goal. I think that's fitting. I think it's a great story.
I think the most fitting part is that he played for Atlanta United's academy as a guest player before he decided to go to Europe. Now, all of that is because he did not have a pro team in his area that he was going to play for. So this kind of shows you why this club has value, what it can be. He wanted to connect with an MLS team, went to the GA Cup with Atlanta United. Shout out to Tony Annan, now at South Carolina. And then he went over to Germany, couldn't really find his feet, came back, spent last year on loan in USL, and now he gets on the field. He's a youth. I mean, he was a USU 20 starting fullback. The guy's like off the charts. Quality, skill, athleticism. It's just all about can he do it at a high level at that fullback position. But I agree with you. Like, what's missing right now, this is a huge soccer area. Can they produce talent like a Dallas does, like a Philly does, like we've seen out of LA at times to sort of help match that? And that's a void they can fill. And so it was cool to see him do it. It's also funny to see it on a week where Sam Stasko puts out a piece about how they didn't build through MLS and they built internationally and all that, that Ben Bender sets up Adam Armour for the goal.
Give me the status report, Doyle, on Charlotte through three games. We've made a lot of jokes about being screwed. We've talked about their lack of, high-end attacking talent, let's say. And as you just referenced, Dave, a different approach to what has historically, well, not a different one, different from the successful previous expansion approaches, I should say. What's the status report? What did they show in this game? It seemed like a little bit of a step forward.
It did. For 40 minutes, they were second best. Then for about 35 minutes from the end of the first half to the middle of the second half, they were clearly better than Atlanta. And then Gonzalo Pineda brought a couple of subs in. Atlanta started doing stuff with the ball through central midfield. Atlanta was the better team over the final 15 minutes. That's how the game broke down. Collectively, I will say I thought they were organized, though they are so susceptible to balls over the top whenever they bring that back line up because they just have no speed. You know, with Fuchs and Carujo on that side, like it's pretty rough for those guys trying to cover in behind. McCoon is he's a nice player, but he's not a put out all those fire type of player. So the back line is going to cost them games. The goalkeeper might save them games. He's been really good through three.
You think Kalina, so?
Blue Crown Soccer said, "Is he the best? Is he the best keeper in the league?" That's how high they were off him on this one.
Settle down.
I just said no. Okay, I didn't say it. Blue Crown.
His shot stopping has been fine. He comes out in moments and gets lost, and that partially could be because the back
line's haven't
a
necessarily.
Mess.
It could be. I haven't necessarily seen that, but like it's. I feel like I need a bigger sample size than three games to give the whole rundown of this kid. But like, what else? Oh, Swiderski. I thought Swiderski did a really good job of finding good spots, like soft spots in between the half spaces a little bit, and then making clever runs to get in between the Atlanta center backs. I know he didn't finish, and I know how frustrating that is for fans. And yes, we're going to talk about Patrick Klamala here in a bit. But I liked what I saw from Swiderski. So there's some positive stuff to take away from this. If you're Charlotte, that said, there haven't been a lot of expansion teams in history that have gone pointless through three games. Last one to do it, maybe the only one to do it, was Inter Miami back in 2020.
Hey, they made the playoffs, Doyle. So, you know,
they made the play-in.
That's right. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
But it's I wouldn't be over the moon if I was a Charlotte fan, but I think they have a good coach. And if you have a good coach in MLS, then a lot of things can start going right, even if you're short on talent.
Would you say that, I mean, look, the pass from Marcelino Moreno to set up Jake Mulroney is just a wonderful pass. I would also argue that maybe a player, a center back with a little bit more pace and ability to move would maybe cut that one out. This is all to say that I'm just setting up a Christian Fuchs being fuked 1v1 with Jake Mulroney. But I'll let that one go now because I could see Dave's just not entertained by that attempt.
He's
been playing in the league for 4 weeks. He's been on the team for 18 months. That's the best you come with? Come on, dude.
By the way, Miguel Angel Ramirez did address his screwed comments, and he actually says he has no regrets, which I really appreciate from him, that it actually lit a fire under his front office to get him to some help so that we can compete with a competitive team. Lots of compete and competitive said in that one. He says he knows he wasn't good, but he's a very passionate person.
The front office and the coach communicating to each other through the press is so wonderful. Sorry, I stepped on your read. Go ahead.
No. That was what the read was about. It shines a light on some other issues that they may have going forward as they try to get this thing on the right track and make some signings that can help them. So he says it's never personal against anybody. He wants to make sure things improve. And I appreciate that from Miguel Hunter Ramirez, and we will provide an outlet for him to say whatever the hell he wants at any time that he wants to say it. All right, let's get into some rapid fire here. How about Minnesota going to New Jersey, going to Red Bull Arena, spoiling the day for the Red Bulls, who I thought played really well. I thought played basically how they would want to play. Created big chances, had a penalty kick, controlled the match, didn't allow very many quality chances at all to Minnesota United, and still lose 1-0 because, Dave, Dane St. Clair is a monster.
It was epic.
Just absolutely stood on his head in this.
It was an epic performance from him. He hasn't played yet this year, so for him to step in and do it was great. The penalty kick was soft from Klamala. Not the awarding of it, the take that Klamala had, but the saves he made in the second half, the way he commanded the box, all of those things were elite. It was the reason.
I thought the first one on Lewis Morgan was the most incredible one, like 10 minutes in. That ball is hit with like outside movement that's going to just hit the side netting at pace, and he comes out of nowhere.
I think it is the reason they got out there. They got out of there with 3 points. If they had tied, it would have been a good performance for them. That's how good he was. And I agree with you. Everything we talked about with Aaron Long on Thursday about why he believes in this team, what he likes that he's seen from them in terms of the way they attack, the way those pieces that sit behind the center forward can sort of act, how direct they are, their understanding of their first pass, their first movement, the way they get to goal. You saw all of that. And Dane St. Clair stood up to it. So he signed a new contract this offseason. So he's got a 3-year deal through 2020 for 2025. Tyler Miller is currently playing out his old deal, which technically is over this year. Team has an option for one more year. I don't know. I don't think Minnesota should finish this year with both of them on their roster. If it was me, I would trade Tyler Miller and get really good assets for him for a team that needs him. If it was another team, I would try and get Dane St. Clair. We've already heard that the Revs came in for him. They say the number's big. The numbers should be big. Like a domestic Canadian full international goalkeeper at this age, under contract, could be sold in the future. If not, could be a match winner in MLS. That should have a ton of value in this league. We saw what Maxime Crépeau got. It shouldn't be at that level because he's not a starter yet. Tyler Miller's not at that level, so it shouldn't be. But it should be a high number.
I don't know, man. He's younger than Crépeau was.
Adrian Maxime Crépeau is a top goalkeeper in MLS. Dane St. Clair had a good game.
Sure. Okay, but hold on. Crépeau had one full season at the level that he's at now that we consider him at, which was last season. I'm just saying. And Dane St. Clair is younger, and he's under contract. So you talk about value. This was ideal for the Minnesota front office is what I'm trying to say. It's like to put him in against the Red Bulls and have him do this, you might as well just not play him now. You might as well just have Tyler Miller do it. And if any team comes calling, you're like, well, tack on another 500K allocation if you want this dude, because look what he did against the Red Bulls. Is there a controversy here, Doyle? Or should Miller be the starting goalkeeper? Should Dane St. Clair? How do they handle this going forward? And if it's not Dane St. Clair, what would you advocate happen for Dane St. Clair? Because I'm sure he wants to play. That's how he's going to develop.
Tyler Miller's been a pretty good keeper in this league for longer. It's not like he's old. He could have eight more years as a starter. I think he's 27. I like Tyler Miller. I think Dane St. Clair's ceiling is higher. I think his floor is lower. And we saw that last year when he started. Like he was pretty abysmal to come out, coming out of the gates, and that's how he lost the job. That said, if you're a coaching staff, your job, part of your job, is to develop the talent on your team. It's about winning games, first and foremost. Everybody agrees with that. But, like, you have to make sure that the good players on your squad or the potentially great players on your squad get better and reach their potential. And I think Dane St. Clair is potentially goalkeeper of the year caliber guy. I don't think Tyler Miller is. I think he's a good MLS goalkeeper. If you're the GM, if you're GM Adrian Heath, you have to sit down with head coach Adrian Heath and say,
"A red wine, a couple,
what is your plan?
Couple of Pinot Grigios.
What is your plan for getting the most out of this young man? Because this is the type of kid who could lead us to silverware and then be sold for the type of fee that Zach Steffen got sold for or that Matt Turner got sold for." So I would have all of that in mind as I'm making these decisions
going
forward.
And just off what Doyle said, credit to Minnesota. They've drafted well. They have not built out their academy. So in a league where teams are going to be bringing in big sums of money for players they're selling, this could be one of your few shots to sort of get a number like that. So it's not just, this is a good young player, how do we get the most out of him? This could be their big payday for the 4 or 5 years while other teams are starting to do it consistently.
And amusingly, the one kid that they have, the one high-level kid that they have from their quote-unquote academy is Fred Emmings, who's like a 17, 18-year-old goalkeeper. He was actually the backup last night for Dane St. Clair. So they do have something in the pipeline at that position as well.
Loons Coast to Coast says, is Kervin Arriaga the biggest steal of the TAM era? Reported 50K GAM for his rights to Austin and a 50K transfer fee for a 24-year-old D-mid that already looks like a massive upgrade to our midfield.
He looks good.
I mean, the biggest steal. He's a good player who's looked good through three games. Yeah. And I like the potential of him and Hassani Dotson together in that midfield in that 4-2-3-1 protecting.
No. Hassani Dotson's a fullback. Okay. Don't even worry about that, Doyle.
Yeah, he's a fullback.
He loves playing that position.
You need to put him in 1v1 defending opportunities where he can get his hands as wide as possible. Like
he also loves when people play it over the top and he turns to his own goal and chases. Yeah. He's really having fun then.
Yeah. Pretend like you're an airplane, Hassani. Like, you know, dude, maybe Red Bull should have had another PK in this one.
I bet those clowns on Instant Replay didn't even really think that was an obvious handball.
We definitely thought that. The question is, where did it occur? TBD. But we had a DM here, Klimala, WTF, $5 million transfer fee, $1 million salary, FFS for something's sake. Fletcher can't get on the field fast enough. This is a Red Bull fan that's fed up with Patrick Klimala. How do we
this
respond?
This is Brent. Hi, Brent. I respond to Brent.
I tried to have some sense of protecting his. I guess he doesn't need protecting. So yeah, just call him out, bury him.
No, like he had. This is a guy who had a goal in week one and three assists in week two. He created two tap-ins in this one. If you look at his underlying numbers from, basically every site that tracks this, like he's an elite forward in terms of generating, chances. And generating chances for himself, I should say, and chances for his teammates. He's also an elite pressing forward. He also gets all over the ball. And with the way the Red Bulls play, whether it's a two up top or, as they did in this one, the 3-4-2-1, you need your center forward to get all over the ball. You know, contend for every header, win a ton of second balls, and then once you're in the final third, have the awareness to either go for the shot or pull back for an assist. So he checks. Like Klimala is a very good player. The issue is he's not a very good finisher. He struggles to put the ball in the back of the net. And that's tough to live with for a center forward. It's probably why he was available in the first place, but also that's what we said 2 years ago about Tati Castellanos. He won the Golden Boot last year. In the long run, I think it's smarter to trust guys who find chances to start burying those chances. I don't think that the Red Bulls should be thinking about moving off of Klamala. I do think that the idea of Klamala and a more natural goal scorer up top in either the 4-2-2-2 that Struber has liked to use or the 3-5-2 that he's used at times, that could end up being really, really good. I don't know if Fletcher's going to be this guy, but like obviously they think there's a chance and that's why they brought him in. But no, if I was a Red Bulls fan, I would not be particularly displeased with what I've seen from Patrick Klamala over the first three games this season.
All right, let's hit some rapid fire here, and you know, like ETR rapid fire. So Andres says we can't spend 8 minutes on every game. That seems wrong, but I guess I'll try to listen this time around. Houston 2, Vancouver 1. No Brian White for Vancouver. We won't talk too much about them unless you want to, Dave. This is the Darwin Quintero game, man. This is how it's been ever since Quintero's been in Houston. He is their best attacking player. He is their best soccer player overall. And when you put him and Coco Karaskia on the field, they are much more dynamic than they were through two games, which is not at all.
I haven't seen reports on what was keeping Coco out. With Darwin, I think we all sort of have to accept that like he can't play every game. So while we sort of like to jump up and down and be like, why is he not on the team every time he does well? The job is to limit him and be able to get the best out of him. And it has to be in spurts because he doesn't cover enough ground to always be effective. He also doesn't always play this way when he's playing week in and week out. But it's so fun to watch him. Like if you are hanging out watching MLS and you see lineups come out and Darwin Quintero starting, turn on that game, whatever platform it's on, because he's going to put on a show. And Coco showed on the first goal what he could do, that ball to the far post. He covers ground. He sees the pass well. I think he's a top level MLS midfielder. I think he has to be a starter for them. I will say this. Hassall hesitant when he comes off his line on the first goal. It's a great touch from Corey Baird, but Hassall stops halfway out. Doesn't know if he wants to fully close or not. And you saw it two or three other times in the first half as well of coming off his line and then stopping and not being able to close down the space because he doesn't go in at full momentum. But credit to Houston for taking advantage of it. I like Griffin Dorsey at wing back as well, or fullback, whatever he's playing. This was a good day for Houston.
Yeah, felt good for Paulo Nakamura. Yeah, you could see the pride he had in the win afterwards. So good for Houston. Not so good for Sporting Kansas City in Colorado. 2-0 losers. Really didn't show much in this one. Diego Rubio gets another goal. He's trying to say, hey, I can do this. Hey, Robin says, I got to be closer to goal. I'm going to get closer to goal. It helps when Andreu Fontas just kind of leaves him. and you can bring up now if you want that I voted for Andreu Fontas for Defender of the Year last year. But 2022 is apparently a much different year. Had a bunch of people hitting us up. Steven Thomas, what's the most disappointing club in MLS and why is it Sporting Kansas City? Austin Rivers or Rodgers? Casey looked to be in trouble early in the season. Should they hit the panic button or all come together for the newer pieces of the attack and midfield? Kansas City fans handling this little swoon with a lot of grace, apparently. But there are some concerns, I think. The back line overperformed probably last year and is underperforming now, and they have a lot more questions up top than they did last year, as well as in the midfield. So I don't doubt Peter Vermees most of the time. I don't take 90 minutes and apply it, you know, universally to their chances this season, but I'm sure he's in the laboratory, as our intro says, trying to cook up something a little bit nicer for Kansas City fans. How about NYCFC's win against Montreal? Any quick thoughts on that one? They look pretty scary. Montreal, I didn't think were terrible. They had spurts. They created chances. They didn't finish the chances at the same rate as NYCFC. But NYCFC is a scary team if they're rolling along.
Yeah, and I actually don't feel like they're rolling. I thought that the first 20 minutes was excellent, but then they kind of took the foot off the gas a little bit, and they still ended up scoring four goals. Like this was not a vintage A-plus NYCFC performance, and they still did that. Now, part of it is Montreal played at the Azteca midweek. They played at 7,200 feet. Even with a rotated squad, it's tough to come from the Azteca on short rest.
And what's more challenging, Azteca or Yankee Stadium? Because that's a home field advantage, baby. You look up in the stands with your binoculars, storm. You see that title banner, and you're like, we're screwed.
Yeah, Montreal's had it Jeez, Ruby. Montreal's had it tough to start this one. I thought Victor Wanyama, who's been huge for them in CCL, had no legs.
I thought it was weird. And I thought that kind of.
Agreed. I don't know why I play him.
Yeah, I thought that.
That was always the whole thing with Wanyama, was like, was he going to have the legs protect him?
Yeah. So I think that was kind of a mistake from Wilfred Nancy. I still like this Montreal team with the travel and the different surfaces and the different types of clubs that they've had to play already this year. Altitude, it's been a lot. It's been a lot on their plate, and it's taken a toll right now in the MLS regular season. If they get past Cruz Azul, it will all have been worth it. Straight up, it'll all have been worth it.
All right, Columbus, Toronto. Crew at the top of the Eastern Conference on 7 points right now. 2-1 winners. Bad news in this one, Jakeel Marshall-Ruddy, who we've talked about a ton this year, leaves early, a non-contact injury. It looked like it might have been the knee. Don't want to speculate on that, but he looked pretty distraught. So we hope for the best news in that sense. We're just going to talk Lucas El Arian here, I think, Dave. He's decent at kicking the ball hard and accurately outside of the 18-yard box. I believe his XG this year is 0.85 on 9 shots. He has 4 goals on those. There might not be a better player, at least in this moment. He's on a heater, but outside the box scoring in MLS history, you could put probably Jovinko in that one, then Lucas El Arian. He is absurd and is probably the leading MVP candidate right now if I had to put one out
there. He doesn't do maybe everything throughout the game, but he pops up in those huge moments. And for the narrative involved folks who vote for MVP and things like that, really gets him going. But what's
bozos.
I think ridiculous about the total numbers he's put up in every one of his categories is how short he's been in this league. Like, he's going to be here for a while. So he's going to break every free kick record. They put his numbers up in your first 3 years against GBS and Pipe Higuain in this game. And goal scoring, he blows them away. Assist numbers, GBS obviously had a huge number. But that's what Zellerán brings to this team. And we talked about it, I think, with Seattle of, like, there have been moments this year where Columbus has played poorly. And he has stepped up and gotten them huge goals. And that kind of gets them the ability to breathe and start to find their feet again in the game and start to take over. And without CCL and without all those other things, this should be a team that can push towards the top of the Eastern Conference through the regular season. And he's obviously the biggest piece why. And he's the biggest piece of why, if you go get someone who's in their prime, they can hit the ground running and you can be successful immediately.
I want to put a no context TFC Bob Bradley quote out there before we hit the next game here, which is, quote, I totally believe we're going to be a really good team. Just a very, like, interesting quote without context. I totally believe, like,
also totally we're believe going we're going to be a really good team this year.
I totally believe that I'm going to stick to
also,
my New Year's
this
resolutions.
This year in like, 5 years,
I totally believe tomorrow at 6 a.m. I'll be on the Peloton.
Is he just saying within by 2050 we'll have won another MLS Cup?
I don't know. It's just an interesting quote, I thought. DC United loses at home to the Chicago Fire, who got another shutout. Gago Slinita comes on this show. He says, I'm looking to break the record, and he's got 3-3 games to start the year, Doyle. What did we think of this Fire performance and of Gaga's start?
He's been very good. His shot stopping is excellent. He got let off the hook a little bit in this one because he had one bad spill that turned into a goal, but it turns out Ola Kamara was just a little bit offside. But he's been like, look, 3 shutouts in 3 games. That's pretty good. He's part of that. Shehos has been part of that. Yeah, Wyatt Omsberg has been part of that. The upgrade in central defense for this Fire team through 3 games has been kind of staggering. And like largely thanks to those two guys. They are playing a boilerplate 4-2-3-1. They are not getting as much out of Gaston Jimenez as I think they need to for it to become a really dynamic thing. They're not yet getting as much out of Jordan Shaqiri as I think they need to for it to become a really dynamic thing. But this is the first time in years that the Fire are putting out a team that doesn't like accidentally douse itself in kerosene and light itself on fire once a game, right? Like,
they're like not Rube Goldberg of failures of like, whoop, whoop, whoop.
Ah! It's got to be nice for Fire fans to see that. So I think that generally speaking in this league, if you have an elite number 10 and you play a very basic 4-2-3-1 default soccer formation and you don't take wild, insane risks defensively, and you don't screw up defensively and you have a good goalkeeper, you're going to end up.
I thought we moved on from Columbus and we're talking about Chicago.
Exactly. Right. That's what the Fire are trying to be under Ezra Hendrickson so far. So I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. That said, in order for them to be the team that they're billed as, that central midfield has to be better at moving the ball quickly into good spots and then ripping apart teams when they're disorganized. Which, I mean, DC
Navarro
was
hurt? He was
all game.
Where was
he?
He
was hurt. Was the first week he was available.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
The Gaston Jimenez still just he wows me sometimes.
An assist.
Can I say Doyle did a great?
He walks in moments that are interesting moments to walk in. I would say, given his paycheck and his
in Doyle's article, he brought back the mailbag last week, which is always fun and always great. Someone asked you about Jonathan Lewis to Chicago Fire because they need that goal scoring from the wing. I don't think that trade will ever happen, but Michael Barrios.
Didn't the Chicago Fire, didn't they have the draft pick Jonathan Lewis?
And Colorado's not going to trade him. Yeah. But Michael Barrios would be interesting of, if you start him in a playoff game, it'll kill you. But he'll score 10 goals off the wing during the season. And that's kind of all they need for Shaqiri to just have someone to feed. Whether Jairo Torres is that guy or not, he's going to be a higher level than what they have. But I don't know that he's exactly that player. And I thought that one would be interesting.
Philly, 2-0 winners against San Jose. They basically gave the Quakes all the possession in the world and tore them apart on the break. And that would seem to be how I would try to play the San Jose Earthquakes, to say, hey, I invite you forward. Do you think you can break me down? Just try your darndest, please, and extend yourself and get as unorganized as you would love to be, and we will beat you. And that's what happens. Still some question marks
Quakes
up top for Philly.
Quakes, all right, so are the Quakes wooden spoon contenders?
Yes.
Don't know.
What are you fumbling over? Yes, 1,000%.
Yes. Yes. But you know Trophies is going to win him like 3 or 4 games total over the course of the whole season. So maybe those will pull him up in the Western Conference in the East. I don't know. Right now, 1 point for San Jose, not going so well for them. 8 goals allowed, which is, I believe, the most in the league, tied with Montreal. So, how about a Portland 1-0 winners against Austin? Look at that, Austin. You win a couple games. You get buried at the bottom of the rundown when you lose on the road to a competent team. How you like that?
Harsh.
Now, only one shot on goal, I think, for Portland. So, this was actually a pretty good...
Only one shot on goal in the game.
Well, when you say it that way. we'll just skip over it. CCL preview. We'll talk more about Austin and Portland later. CCL preview. Tuesday, Comunicaciones hosting New York City and Guatemala. Wednesday, Montreal hosting Cruz Azul. Of course, NYCFC up 3-1 on aggregate. Cruz Azul up 1-0 on aggregate. Pumas hosting New England on Wednesday as well. 3-0 aggregate lead for the Revs. And then Thursday, Leon hosting Seattle. 3-0 aggregate lead for the Sounders. It feels like there is a chance for an all-MLS semifinal. It's a small chance because Montreal would have to get through. But for an MLS finalist to be locked in after the middle of this week.
Remember when there was a chance that there would be an all-MLS quarterfinal between the Rapids and NYCFC?
Yeah, I know. I remember all those things. And so it was all extremely painful. But if you don't have hope and you don't have belief and you can't just suspend it all irrationally to enjoy this, then you wouldn't listen to the show or enjoy CCL. Dunny came on MLS Today to say, and he said he never felt that MLS, quote, needs to win CCL to validate itself, that trying to compare ourselves to a league that's 100 years old is silly, that on the day, any MLS team can beat a Liga MX team. I agree with that last part. What would winning this edition of the tournament prove? Like, what's at stake here for MLS in this tournament, given that there's no Rayados, there's no Tigres, there's no America? They don't have sort of the traditional giants that have pounded MLS teams in the past, because MLS has not been inept against Liga MX. We just haven't gotten it done in the high leverage moments, so to speak. But what if on Wednesday night, you know, New England go to Pumas and just handle that with ease? What if Seattle go to Lyon and handle that with ease? What if, it's much less likely again, what if Montreal find a way at home to overturn a respectable 1-0 loss at Azteca? What if New York City continue their march? What if? Like, what is all this potentially building up to? How much does it matter to you?
Well, it matters a great deal because I talk about it constantly, and I've watched for it.
Sure,
for 15 years.
Yeah.
And
but now that you're there's a possibility sitting right in front of you. How much do you care about these results? And
I will 100% not acknowledge the conversation around it being an all MLS anything because that's absurd in CCL. I think there's a merit to what Dunny said. Of it's not a necessity, it's not a need. I also think there's merit to winning soccer games and winning trophies. At some point, an MLS team has to show they can win this thing. Like, whether it's against Club America or not, whether you want to, although they are would be awful and it would be great if they were in this competition right now, whether you want to find other nuances to discuss this one versus other ones, fine. But at some point, a team has to win this trophy and win a final, and that would be a huge moment. I think it would probably have the most potential to alter the view of players who have already been altered. I think it would continue to push along the players that want to come play in MLS, either from Liga MX or instead of Liga MX, because I think the view of the league would continue to progress. I don't think it's going to win fans over in Mexico, and I don't think that that's a necessity. It might win some fans over in the US, and I think that matters, but it's a sport. It's a sport that's played on the field. We can have all the conversations we want. If you lose every single game and you never win a trophy, then you're behind the other team, the other league, the other competition, whatever it is. And that's a thing that matters. And I think it would be massive this year going into Leagues Cup and having these games. And as you said, the thing that fascinates me about Leagues Cup is we always see MLS teams play Tigres, Club America, Santos when they're on their top, Leon when they're on their top. We don't ever actually really see the middle play the middle. So that's where Leagues Cup will be fascinating.
Or the bottom play the bottom. Or the bottom play the middle. Or the middle play the top.
There's no such thing as the bottom. But so having an MLS team win this trophy now, when then from here on it'll be slightly shifted, I think, in the consciousness because you'll have Leagues Cup. I think that would be important for a lot of people. And I know for people like me and probably Doyle, and I can attest for Elliot Tomes, who's in a basement somewhere on big soccer and all that stuff. I think it'll matter to a lot of those fans who have stuck by it for a while.
Man. Do we have to win this one, Doyle? Like, just looking at the bracket, the teams involved, the way the results have gone so far, does it feel like there would be more pain in this than in past editions, just given the opportunity that's there, the rhetoric that's there, as Dave said, the League's Cup that's coming? Like, we can't – I know Mikel Arriola is going to come on this show and be like, oh, well, look, the growth metrics of MLS are this, that, and those, and we got to match that as Liga MX. But, like, as fans, really care about who wins the games and who hoists the trophy at the end and holding it over your rival. Like, is this the opportunity that we can't let go?
Yep.
Who would be – last question on this because we're so into this. It's just – you're so engaged.
I'm so no. I'm so in. I have not felt like this about CCL, about MLS winning in CCL since Marky Delgado was at the penalty spot late in that second leg in Chivas, like. Like, oh my God, it's here. Like, hope died in me that day in that moment. And I have not let myself feel anything about CCL since then. And given the way these games have gone, given the teams, the MLS teams that are in the quarterfinals, like Seattle or Seattle, they're there. Every year, this is the most consistently good and occasionally great team in MLS history. The 13-year run that they've had, they have so much organizational know-how. The Revs set the record for single season points last year. They have a goalkeeper who's going, well, maybe not, but they have a goalkeeper who's going to Arsenal. They have the league MVP. They have, you know, two forwards or three forwards now with Josie who can just win you a game out of nothing. And they have the, you know, the most legendary coach in U.S. soccer history, someone who has won multiple international titles before with an MLS team. Granted, it was a different format with that 1998 DC United team, but like Bruce led that team to two significant titles that year. That's two. And three is NYCFC, who I think were the best team in MLS last year. And I know they didn't always show it in the regular season, but they certainly did in the playoffs. They have mostly shown it thus far in CCL as well.
And Montreal have a proud tradition. Didn't sound like you were going to mention.
I'm going to mention Montreal. I just wanted to finish saying what I was going to say about NYCFC, who are a team that are built in a way that points toward the future of MLS. NYCFC have, you know, homegrowns playing significant minutes or being sold for millions of dollars to teams in the biggest leagues in the world. But also they're reinvesting that by going out and getting some of the most exciting attacking players, young attacking players from South America. What,
rumors they got a 5-year deal out of Brazil, like quietly.
Right, that's yeah. So like
winger.
And that's in addition to Talis Magno and
Andrade, who scored this weekend. Yeah. And so did.
Right.
Yeah,
ridiculous. But they've also done a good job of filling out that middle with lifers like Keaton Parks or Sean Johnson or Alex Collins and Maxime Cheneau, but then going out on top of that and adding Thiago Martins, of keeping Maxi Morales, who's a legitimate star, around for half a decade and making it his team in a way that MLS teams haven't necessarily been good about. Those three teams in particular, and then you add on top a Montreal team that Weeby, as you said, has such a proud history in this particular tournament, and who has in Wilfred Nancy a coach who I think a hell of a lot of. He's been really impressive through his year in charge now, and who he's done such a good job of getting more out of young players than I necessarily thought was there. I feel a lot of hope, and I feel a lot of hope because of it's those four teams, and because for the first time in forever, it's not Monterrey, Tigres, and Club America. Those are the big three in Liga MX, and they have been for a decade. And I know that there have been a couple other wins by other very good teams, Cruz Azul being one of them. If it was a big four, I would add Cruz Azul in. But like, you know, the Equipos Gigantes in Liga MX, it's the two Monterrey clubs and Club America, and they're not in this tournament. And the biggest MLS teams, the best MLS teams are. If it doesn't happen this year, I will be devastated. I wouldn't have said this last week, but then we saw how those games last week played out. I will be devastated if one of these MLS teams doesn't get it done in 2022.
Protect yourself. Get those COD pieces in place, folks, because as often happens, hope turns to despair, and hopefully that won't be the case. I will just say, we talked about the pre-show meeting. I part of me hopes that it's an all MLS final. I don't even want to mention that without knocking on wood, but it also wouldn't seem fitting. But I don't care how it happens at this point. Please, MLS, just get over the hump. Just end this conversation, at least for in the, you know, will they ever do it? And let us make it a year-by-year thing instead. That's it for us. Anything you guys think we didn't talk about? I mean, I'm sure Anders doesn't think so. We're at an hour and 28 here, so we should probably get out of here. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com, at extratime on Twitter to get at us. We will be back on Thursday to wrap up everything but that Leon-Seattle game, and we'll see you then. Adios. We'll be right back.